The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things you own are actually helping you to live out what you really feel called to in your heart? There's so much peace of mind that you can sense when your money is aligned with your values and convictions, as well as your financial goals. And there's really, really peace of mind when you know deep down that your financial goals are in sync with your values and convictions. There's just stress and anxiety when that alignment isn't there.
That's right, James. But that's easier said than done. There's so much financial information coming at us every minute of every day. It can actually be overwhelming. Terminology, ideas and philosophies, various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services. Keeping all of this information straight can be downright confusing and possibly even scary.
That's right. Yeah. When you're confused, you are simply not making good decisions.
Mm-mm.
And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be, and it can hurt you pretty badly as well. Well, welcome to episode 20.
That's right.
That's right. Episode 20 of Money and Mission. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio. And each week in the first part of our show, we'll talk about some current financial events so you'll have a better understanding of what some of the terminology and events actually mean.
And there is a lot to talk about this week. There's always a lot to talk about,
see if
right?
we can fit it all in
That's
one
right.
episode.
That's right. Well, part of the way through the show, then we'll get to our weekly puzzle. And a weekly puzzle is simply a brain teaser that we'll share with you. And we never know if these puzzles are actually interesting to you or not, but it's fun for us and we're on the mic. So
that's right.
So we get to do the weekly puzzle.
Yeah, so let's jump right in, James, to our week in review. I think I know, but what do you think was a financial news highlight throughout this past week?
Right. Well, as you know, as we're recording this session, one of the big headlines anyway, the dock workers on strike.
It's still fresh.
Yeah.
I woke up to that news this morning.
That was just this morning,
mm-hmm.
wasn't it?
They were talking about it the past couple of days, but, you know, you never know how those things work out.
Right. But how many? There's thousands
yeah.
of dock workers on strike.
I've seen it was over 45,000 dock workers that are currently on strike across 36 ports all the way from Maine down to Texas.
Wow. So the impact potentially of the U.S. trade deficit is like on full display here.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I mean, we ship things out to other parts of the world, but we also buy a lot from all over the place.
A whole lot. That's right.
A whole lot from all over the globe. We've talked about that here on the podcast before, about all the things we wear, all the things we use in our homes, our furniture, just so many different things. Everything, it seems like, is made across the pond somewhere. And now the dock workers are on strike. In order for that stuff to get from across the pond to you, it has to come through the port.
Mm-hmm.
And with the port workers on strike, guess what?
It's going to have a lot of trouble. They said it was the first one they've been on strike in nearly 50 years.
For a long, long time, yeah.
So it's hard to have, I guess, modern metrics for this.
Yeah. But it's been, I mean, we can only imagine. I think we'll have to track along with this as we go,
mm-hmm.
for sure. But we've talked before about the amount of shipping, for example, that comes through the Suez Canal and the Panama Canal, and how if there's a problem there, that sort of stops things up around the globe. And now here we are with a sticking point in ports all across the country.
Yeah, and it's interesting how much more of a news headline it is, being that it's so close to home now.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether it was in the Suez or Panama, we were talking about it. We were sharing what the effects could be with folks, but I didn't feel like it was being as talked about.
That's right. That
it's close to home, it's top of mind.
That's right. Shipping just has a major impact on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff has to get from point A to point B if someone is going to be able to use it.
Yeah, shipping has a major impact on everything.
That's right. So if not as much stuff shows up somewhere, then there's a scarcity potentially of
shortage,
that, whatever that is.
Prices could inflate.
Prices go up. And it's funny how prices go up and it just never seems like they really come back down.
Yeah.
Right. The Fed keeps talking about how we're on this glide path to 2% inflation, but 2% is still up.
It's not deflation.
It's not deflation.
Right.
Prices have not come down and stayed down. That's exactly right. Well, apparently, though, this is kind of a different topic, but apparently there are problems brewing in the world of coffee.
Brewing.
Brewing.
What a horrible pun. That was actually pretty good.
I actually didn't think about it. I was not sitting there thinking, how can we make a pun about coffee? Right. But there are problems brewing in the world of coffee.
Yeah. Like, well, what kind of problems?
Well, like everything involved in economics, you know, when something happens even halfway across the globe, it has an impact on everything else, this domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
So make a list of the companies, or the countries, I should say, that are exporters of coffee. Like Brazil is a major, major exporter and producer of coffee,
mm-hmm.
dating all the way back to the 1840s. Apparently, there are more than 300,000 coffee farms in Brazil.
Wow.
And before we get to other countries, did you know that about 3 billion with a B cups of coffee are drunk around the world every single day?
Oh, yeah, I'd believe that. That's a large number, but some people are crazy about their lattes and coffees.
Yeah.
And that's just here.
Well,
around the world,
3 billion. I was just doing some math, and I thought, if you have, let's say, what's an average cup of coffee cost? $3,
sure
ish. I mean, you have to average it out.
Take gas station, Starbucks, find the medium.
Yeah, if we average the price of coffee the way the Fed averages inflation, we'd come up with like 5 different answers.
And then we'd have to revise some of them.
We'd revise some of them.
Okay. Later.
Okay. All right. We would. That's right. And maybe we'd get back all the way to the original answer, because our answer would just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. All right. Let's stay focused. But let's pretend that those 3 billion cups of coffee average out to like $3 a cup.
Mm-hmm.
That's $270 billion worth of coffee that gets consumed.
That's a quarter over the trillion course of dollar a month. Industry.
Yeah, over the course of a month, $270 billion. That is like 2/3 of the U.S. government budget deficit consumed in coffee.
Well, maybe on top of bonds, the government should open some coffee shops.
Well, that may not be a bad idea.
Try to lower our debt.
But then the price of coffee would probably become $12 a cup.
You're not
okay,
lying.
Let's not think about that. So Brazil, apparently there have been weather problems. There's a drought going on in Brazil. And so the price of coffee, well, there's not as much coffee being produced because of the weather related issue. And so that there are problems brewing in the world of coffee. But some of the other countries around the world that produce coffee are Colombia, also one of Brazil's neighbors, Indonesia on the other side of the other pond,
mm-hmm.
right? Ethiopia, Honduras, Peru, India. I didn't know India really grew a lot of coffee until I was reading this article. Guatemala, Uganda. So these are countries around the world that are just major coffee producers.
Didn't Haiti used to be a major coffee grower as well?
Haiti did. Yeah, it used to be a major coffee grower. That's actually a really not a very nice story, right? Because in Haitian history, there was just an enormous amount of slavery, and the French had Haiti was originally a French colony, and I forget the whole story, but it was not a nice story anyway. Mm-hmm. And but then again, as we got into the 1800s, Brazil started really becoming more dominant in the coffee market as opposed to Haiti. But it's a story that if you haven't looked up and read the history of Haiti, you really should do that sometime. And it's kind of a not very nice story about international economics and the nasty things that people do to each other sometimes. So, but I always thought, you know, when I was walking down the aisle at the grocery store and it says Italian roast coffee, I always thought that came from Italy. But apparently Italy doesn't grow coffee. Italy roasts coffee, but they don't actually grow coffee. So the climate apparently is not conducive, and the climate in Brazil and some of these other countries that we were talking about is a lot more conducive to growing coffee. But certainly, you know, if the price of coffee goes up because of a combination of weather problems around the globe and shipping problems that we were just talking about, that would start
a combination of the two.
That would make a noticeable difference in my lifestyle anyway, because that cup of coffee is kind of a central part of my day.
Yeah. Well, I know one other financial news highlight that we don't have time here to unpack now is the recent hurricane that came through Florida and the Carolinas. I know thoughts and prayers go out to all those folks, but maybe on one of the next shows, we'll unpack that a little bit.
Let's talk about that next week.
Yeah, about how that may affect local economics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, we need to take a quick break to hear a spot from our supporters. When we come back, we will jump back in to, well, no, we will begin our asset class episode. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. What are you laughing about?
You grabbed the paper to read that.
Oh, I did. I had to read that. I was like,
episode
19, 20. What are we doing here? Yeah, that's right. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we are talking today about some of our favorite topics. Stocks, bonds, stuff
like asset that. Classes.
Right. Asset, that's right. So, you know, we say money in mission. It is super important for you to understand your mission. And some of the people we've had on the podcast to date have talked about some of the fascinating missions and endeavors that they've been involved with. But every single one of them involves planning and doing the right things with money.
Or they wouldn't be able to do the great things that they do.
Or they wouldn't be able to. That's right. So there is this relationship between money and your mission. And you've got to understand, or at least seek to understand, what the money is all about and how that works if you want to be successful in your mission. So so if you ever, you know, if you bump into us off the air sometime, there will be a quiz on any of the things we talked about here.
We'll say excuse me first.
That's right. That's right. So anyway, so what should we put first, bonds or stocks? What do you want to do first?
Let's start with the stocks.
Let's start with stocks.
Yeah.
So what are stocks? I mean, we hear stocks, stock market's up, stock market's down, right? What are stocks exactly?
Well, stocks represent ownership in a company.
Yeah. They literally are.
Public, publicly traded company.
So you have, I mean, let's just pretend we have a business. Let's say I have a business and I own the business myself and there's no partners.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have 100% share of that business, right? But if I split the business up and let's say you buy half of it, then we would be in partnership together. I would have 50% and you would have 50%. So mm-hmm. we would each have a share of that business.
We're the two owners.
We were the two owners.
Mm-hmm.
We would be shareholders. Even if it's not publicly traded, we would each own.
And there's no certificate given out, right?
Right. I mean, anytime.
We're still 50% owners.
We're still 50%. I mean, anytime people do that, there has to be something. It may not be a certificate, but there's an agreement of some kind.
Sure.
And that's right. So you have a business structure and you have more than one owner. And if we bring in more owners, then each person has a smaller and smaller share of that. Well, when you get to publicly traded companies, then you got thousands, millions.
Yeah. Lots and lots of owners.
Lots and lots.
Some have just a couple shares. Other institutional players have lots and lots of shares.
That's right.
And that makes up their percentage.
That's right. But they are still owners.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really key point. Owners of a business.
And not necessarily the decision makers, but
usually not decision makers, mm-hmm. right? Because
they vote on large things, but they don't do the day-to-day operations.
That's right. Day-to-day is managers of the business and so on and so forth. So, but we really have to, we have to, it's easy to forget that if you own stock, that you are an owner.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several things that happen when you are an owner. If you're in a publicly traded company, you will receive correspondence from that company periodically. So let's say the board of directors needs to be somebody's term comes up on the board of directors and everybody's voting to determine if they want that person to serve another term. Or if there's some other candidate for that board position,
mm-hmm.
well, then the company sends out a proxy notice to all of their shareholders. They send out a notice and say, what do you think? It's, you know, here's the person who's up for vote and we need everybody's vote. And you're a shareholder, which means you get some correspondence like that. It either comes in the mail, snail mail, or you get it by email. There is... Yeah, so issues like electing a board of directors and other issues too. This is where like biblically responsible mutual funds that have this mandate to be working with companies that follow specific principles, when they see issues come up, then they get involved in voting on those issues.
Mm-hmm.
And if
you try to encourage them with some of those policies.
That's right. And if you're a shareholder, some of those issues would come up in front of you too. You would have an opportunity to voice your opinion. And that's one way that as Christian people, we can stand for values that are important to us. But you had a note here about the total market capitalization of all publicly traded companies. That's how much the worth is if you added all U.S. companies together.
Yeah, $50
trillion. 50 trillion.
With a T.
With a T.
Could cover our debt, but where would all the companies go?
Yeah. Well, it would cover the debt, but it would be more than half.
Yes.
It would be more than half of the market cap of all publicly traded companies would be required to sell all of that off just to pay the debt.
70%.
70%.
Yeah.
Okay, let's
35
talk.
35 trillion debt.
Let's talk about something else, right?
Market cap.
We should talk about something else.
We'll get
else.
Back to the debt when we talk about bonds in the next segment.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But wow, I mean, putting that in perspective, it's just, you know, it looks like a really big number. But when you compare what you own, like the value of all those stocks, to what you owe, the value of the debt, and then suddenly you realize, oh, my goodness, we've got this problem mm-hmm. right on our hands. Well, there are different types of stocks. So we just talked about what would happen if we owned a business together, and that would really be referred to as a partnership. And if there is a company that's organized so that people do have shares or certificates like that, then there is common stock.
Mm-hmm.
And that represents ownership, and it gives shareholders the right to vote, as we just talked about.
It's the more traditionally understood type of stock, I would say.
That's right. And here's where if the company grows in value, then if you own stock, then the value of your share goes up, which of course is what everybody hopes for when they buy stocks to begin with. I mean, sometimes people are hoping, they're not thinking so much about the stock going up in value. They're thinking more about like dividends that the mm-hmm. company might pay.
Yep.
And if we have time here, we can talk about dividends as well. But there's a second kind of stock that you had listed here, and that is preferred stock.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
No voting rights, but they do get some preference as far as dividend payments and other things.
Okay, so somebody owns preferred stock and they are still an owner of the company.
Sure.
And a tiny little proportionate share, right? But they don't get any voting rights. They just kind of have to sit there and watch all these decisions get made.
Watch the building burn down.
That's right, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
And in exchange for that, then they get a better dividend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, if you are buying stock, you have to decide if you like that.
Yeah, right? It's more important to you.
That's right. You know, we're not here to tell you that common stock is better or worse than preferred stock. You just need to understand how that works mm-hmm. so that if you have preferred stocks in your portfolio, that you understand that you don't have a voting right.
No, that's right.
Right. What happens if the company misses a dividend in preferred stock? Well, then typically a preferred stock would say, I mean, if you were a common stockholder, then the company missed a dividend.
You don't get it.
Oh, well, too bad.
Yep.
Too bad, so sad.
Right? That's right.
That's right. But if you are a preferred shareholder, usually the company has to make up the dividend to you before they can start paying dividends to anybody else. So you kind of have a higher claim.
And to pay it back to start paying dividends to the common stockholders.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. So they have to pay you the dividend before they pay the common stockholders.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So your trade-off, you don't get to say anything. You don't get to vote. You have no input whatsoever. But you have first claim mm-hmm. on the income that the company might be generating.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. What a tangled web we weave, right?
That's why we make a whole show out of it.
That's right. We do make a whole show out of it. So, yeah, so people can buy stocks individually, and clearly there's risk.
Sure.
Right? The value of those stocks goes up and down, mm-hmm. and it goes up and down based on earnings. So this is, you know, do we have time to talk about Dairy Queen here?
Sure. We've got a couple minutes left.
So let's think about how this works, really. You know, in prior to 1977, this little company called Dairy Queen, right? I know Dairy Queen.
Oh, yeah. I know Dairy Queen very well.
The Oreo Blizzard,
mm-hmm.
my favorite.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, you too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, cookies and cream ice cream, so Oreo Blizzard.
That's right. Remember we talked about the Big Mac Index?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think there should be an Oreo Blizzard Index as well. That's, you know, if Oreo Blizzards get to be more expensive, that's the cost of living going
up. And a
Reese's
Peanut Butter Index.
Yeah.
And they have all these food indices.
That's right. Yeah.
Just go to dinner and tell how well places are doing.
That's right. But anyway, the point is, prior to 1977, Dairy Queen was a publicly traded company.
Mm.
And then Warren Buffett got interested. And he bought all the shares of Dairy Queen and took it off the market. So that Dairy Queen is now a privately held company. At this point, Warren Buffett only has to be concerned about whether enough people are eating complex sugars, like ice cream and Oreo cookies, to put profits in his pocket, right? He doesn't have to worry about anything else. Well, I mean, he has other things to worry about, but in terms of
Dairy Queen, that
company, yeah. it is what it is. So he's not valuing the company all the time. But if those shares were still publicly traded, then each person who owned the stock, yeah, they should be concerned about whether Dairy Queen is still selling enough stuff to turn a profit. But
they're going to have their own ideas and direction to take the company.
That's right. And then now you have millions of people who all have different ideas.
Yep.
And you all have, and you also have millions of people who have different financial circumstances,
mm-hmm.
right?
So and goals with why they have their shares.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's say that me and you each own, you know, shares of Dairy Queen, and Joe owns shares of Dairy Queen, and Crystal owns shares of Dairy Queen. Crystal runs up a big, huge debt, and she has to pay her debt, so she sells her shares of Dairy Queen. Well, that could put downward price pressure on the price, right? So
mm-hmm.
so if a stock is publicly traded, you've got all these different dynamics going on, and that impacts the price of the stock.
Wow.
Wow. We're out of time.
That's right, we are. That was our segment on stocks. We got to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll pick it up with bonds. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we're talking about some of our favorite topics.
Dairy Queen.
Oh, that's right, Dairy Queen. And the Blizzard Index.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. The Oreo Blizzard Index. Not just blizzards. That's right. Well, we forgot. You know, we ran out of time. We were having so much fun talking about the Blizzard Index that we forgot about our weekly puzzler. And I'm sure that our listeners are saying,
I bet you people were freaking out.
They dinged us
for the break
for missing that weekly puzzler. So we're going to slide that in here at the beginning of segment three.
Yeah, so for last week's puzzle, it was what has a head, but no brain and no body?
What has a head, but no brain and no body?
Lettuce.
Oh.
What do you think about that, Joe?
That was a dad joke. Crystal, what did you think?
I thought that was very witty.
That was witty. Okay.
So. It was a groaner is what it was.
Yeah, it was a groaner. That's right. Well, all right. So let's, moving on. You know, forget about what's behind us and this was yours.
Oh, yeah. This was my week's choice.
Yeah, that's right. Last week's was mine. So now we'll get to see if yours are any better.
Try to make it a little financial related.
A little. Okay. Yeah. All right. So this week's weekly puzzler. Oh, do you want me to read it?
Oh, I read the first one. I can read this one as well.
It's your puzzler.
Sure. This week's puzzle, folks. It is, I'm a childhood savings icon, but if you rely on me too much as an adult, you might end up squealing in frustration when inflation eats away at your savings.
What am I?
Yep. What am I? I'm a childhood savings icon, but if you rely on me too much as an adult, you might end up squealing in frustration when inflation eats away at your savings. What am I?
What am I? Yeah. Send your answers to radiopuzzle at wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com, and we will read the correct answer right here on the podcast next week.
All right. Now let's jump into our next segment. We just finished talking about stocks, that asset class. Now we're going to jump into bonds, Jane. Yeah. What are bonds?
Yeah. So when you have if you buy stock, then you are an owner.
Mm-hmm.
You own a portion of a business. If you buy a bond, then you have loaned money.
You're a lender to that company.
That's right.
Not an owner.
Well, not just a company.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah. Government.
Yeah. You could loan money to the government.
Mm-hmm.
Could loan money to
municipals or municipalities.
That's
or
right. Like
federal
the county.
Government.
Yeah. Cumberland County. City of Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You could loan money to a school.
Yeah. All these places need money.
All these places need money. The Turnpike.
Sure.
The Pennsylvania Turnpike. Yeah. So, but no matter what it is, you now loaned money. So you are a lender.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't think about themselves as being a lender. Most people just kind of say, ah, whatever, I bought a bond.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And but there are things that people should think about if they're going to buy bonds.
Well, let's back up and say exactly how a bond works.
Sure.
If someone were to buy a bond,
right,
how would that work?
So you buy a bond. Let's pretend you buy a bond today. And a bond, first of all, has an issue date. If you buy the bond right at issue, that means you bought a brand new bond. And a bond has a maturity date. So that's a date at which whoever issued the bond is responsible to pay all the money back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many bonds will pay interest along the way. So you buy a bond and whoever issued the bond is paying you interest.
Can they call that the coupon rate?
The coupon rate.
Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, this was like way before
my... It's an old-timey term.
It is. That's mm-hmm. right. I think way before my time, there actually was a little booklet that people would clip out a coupon and mail it in to get their interest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the S&H green stamps? Do you remember S&H green stamps? Yeah, Crystal. I mean, my parents, I mean, this was a big, big deal in our house growing up. We had this little book, and everywhere we went that participated in S&H green stamps, you would get some stamps based on the value of what you purchased, and then you'd take them home, you'd lick the back of it and you'd start pasting it in the book. And when the book filled up, then you got to get discounts or maybe things for free or whatever, kind of like points today, you know, bonus points and that kind of thing.
I seen something on TV the other day about a now defunct railroad company from back in the day. And someone went through their grandparents' attic and they found some were already clipped out, but it was mostly a whole sheet of those coupons, and they put it in a frame because you can't get the money at this point.
Right, because it's worthless
at
this point.
It's just a collector's item now.
That's right. But I think, anyway, the point is, sorry for that little tangent, right? You know, but I think back in the day, again, you know, you had to clip off the coupon and send it in, and that would give you the right to collect on a certain amount of interest. And mm-hmm. so bonds started describing it then as a coupon rate.
Mm. So these companies, these municipalities, these cities, and the federal government, they all need money.
They all need money.
They need money. They have a project going on, or they have their budget. They need to balance their budget. So in order to get that money, they issue bonds.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And the bonds pay interest, and we call that a coupon rate. So, but then whoever's holding that bond, again, if they hold the bond to maturity, whenever the bond comes due, then whoever issued it has to pay the money back. But you can also buy bonds in the open market.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pretend you have a bond and you paid $10,000 for that bond, and you want to sell it. Then you might get $10,000, or you might get a little bit more or a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
It really would depend on interest rates at the time.
When you want to sell it.
When you want to sell it.
Because it's set at the beginning.
It's set. Mm-hmm. That's right. So we know the Fed raises interest rates and lowers interest rates. So let's pretend that Crystal issued a bond. Okay. And I bought a bond from Crystal. And it's $10,000. And Crystal is paying 5% interest on that. And she's stuck paying 5% interest for however long the bond is supposed to be there. And now the Fed comes along and let's pretend at the time I bought the bond that 5% looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Fed comes along and lowers interest rates.
Well, it looks even better. It
looks even better.
Yeah.
Right? So
they drop it from 5 to, say, 4.
To 4. That's right. Then
any new bond would only be 4, and you have Crystal's piece of paper at 5.
At 5. And she's stuck paying 5% for as long as that paper is out there. And now I've got the paper, and you're sitting there going, hey, how do I get 5? You know, James,
I want that piece of paper.
I'll buy that from you. You know. And I'm sitting here saying, well, wait a minute. You know, if I get my $10,000 from you, I'm going to have to reinvest it, but I can't get 5% anymore. Right. So
interest rate risk.
That's right. So I would say to you, well, Eric, you know, I'll sell you this paper and then Crystal can pay you the 5%, but you're going to have to pay me a little bit more for it because, I mean, I want a little bump because I have to take that money and invest it at a lower interest rate.
So then you'd be buying it at a premium.
You would buy it at a premium. Mm-hmm. Right. And I would sell it and I would have a gain on my bond at that time. Still, whenever it comes due,
Crystal only owes me back $10,000,
mm-hmm.
right? And the same is true if you buy it, you know, if I buy it from Crystal or if I buy a bond from Johnson & Johnson or Merck or Pepsi Cola or Coca-Cola or the federal government or anybody, it works the same way.
Mm-hmm. So right. Similar to stocks in that you're both infusing the company with cash.
That's right.
To help their operations. But
that's
with
right.
a stock, you're an owner.
That's right.
And with a bond, you're a lender.
That's right. That's right. But let's keep that same example going on. And I have Crystal's bond and she's paying me 5%. And now the Fed comes along and raises interest rates.
I want a new bond.
Now I'm trying to get out of it, right?
Right.
Because I'm looking around saying, hey, Crystal's paying me 5% and maybe I've got 10 years left to go or however long till that bond comes due. So I'm looking around saying, Eric, man, I've got a deal for you. Hey, Joe, I've got a deal for you, right? It's paying 5%. And you're
nice
saying,
discount on it.
And you're saying, oh, no way. I'm not.
Make it worth it for me.
Make it worth it for me. That's right. So I might say, well, you know, if I have to sell out of this bond, I'll sell it to you for less.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you only have to pay me like $9,000, but you're still getting the equivalent of 5% on $10,000, then you would actually have a higher yield.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so if interest rates go up, usually the value of bonds goes down. And if interest rates go down, usually the value of bonds goes up. Still, if you hold to maturity, if you hold all the way to the end, you only get the amount of money back that the bond was issued for in the first place. So that's just a really short version. There are all different kinds of bonds.
Yeah. There's some other points too. Some bonds are convertible. Convertible bonds.
To stock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To a predetermined number of shares.
Sure.
Right.
I think you'd have to crunch some numbers to find out if it's worth it for you.
That's right. The Treasury issues several different kinds of bonds. So the U.S. Treasury.
So like you have bills.
Treasury bills. Those are bonds that when you buy them, they come due in 1 year or less. And if you buy a Treasury note, then that's a bond that would come due anywhere between 2 years and 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you buy a Treasury bond, usually that's really long term, like 20 10, years.
20, 30.
Yeah, much longer term like mm-hmm. that. But the government also issues something that's called a zero coupon bond.
Mm. So no coupon.
No interest is paid, but they issue it at a discount,
mm-hmm.
right? So what it means to buy something at a discount is maybe the bond is going to pay back $10,000 when it comes due, but you might be able to buy it for $9,000.
But when it comes due with a zero coupon bond, you get the full 10.
You get the full 10.
At the end.
That's right.
Matures.
That's right. So that's like my saying, hey, Joe.
So that makes up for no interest.
It does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I'd say, hey, Joe, look, you know, I'd like to borrow some money. I'd like to borrow $10,000, but you only have to give me 8. And then when this whole thing comes due, I'll pay back 10. And that's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
So depending how long it is until the $10,000 comes back, depending how long you have to wait to actually get that discounted value, that turns into the amount of yield or the amount of growth that you would have. So you need to be aware of that. Well, we're almost out of time here. I'd like to talk more about bonds when we come back in
sure.
the next segment.
Time's just flying by.
Time's just flying by.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will finish up with bonds, and then we'll jump on to precious metals. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical principles and wisdom. I'm James.
And this is Eric. And thanks for everybody being with us today.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you wanted to pick up back where we were from the bonds before we jump into precious metals, so let's start there.
Right. Well, you know, we were talking about, I think we kind of ended up on different types of treasury bonds.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of the things we said was that if somebody holds a bond all the way to maturity, that they get paid back.
That par value.
That's right. So does that mean there isn't any risk in a bond?
No, that's not true.
Right. But if you get paid back, I mean, how is there risk?
Well, I think we said one earlier, right? Interest rate risk. That's one.
If you want to
pick up. Well, we kind of talked about that. You know, there's interest rate risk with bonds in the sense that if you buy a bond today at 5%, there's a risk that when that matures, you're not going to be able to get that same 5% in the future.
Right.
Could be better, could be worse, that's a risk you're taking.
That's a risk you're taking. Yeah. I suppose, I mean, we talked about how bonds go up and down in value, that if you had to sell your bond at a point where interest rates had changed and you couldn't get the face value for your bond, then you could lose money.
If you have to sell it at a discount.
If you have to sell it at a discount. Now, if you're holding a bond all the way to maturity, and like let's say you're holding a treasury bond all the way to maturity, and the government actually has to print money to pay your loan back, then your money's not worth what it was.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know I don't like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not my favorite topic. But it's a risk.
Sure.
It is absolutely a risk, right? Another risk, like you have these revenue bonds out there. A revenue bond is where you have a municipality that does a project. Like they'll build a toll road, a bridge that people have to pay to go over, or like they'll build a utility plant. And
sometimes it'll benefit a couple of municipalities and they'll kind of go in on it, right?
Right. That's that's right. But let's say that a couple different cities decide to
a new highway initiative.
New highway where they build a new electric plant or something like that. They go together with the electric company. And so everybody anticipates that there will be more revenue generated by this project. So they'll issue a specific kind of bond where the source of the payment of the bond is the revenue that's generated by their project.
And that's a revenue bond.
That's correct? Called a revenue bond. Yeah. But but the risk, again, is let's say you hold this bond all the way to maturity. Another risk really is that maybe the organization or the company or the government agency or whatever, probably not the government agency, they decide not to pay back their principal.
Or they go bankrupt. Company goes out of business.
Yeah. I mean, we all know a city not too far from here that had that problem a few years ago where they were in bankruptcy. But a company, you could say, well, that company is very solid, very stable, and I don't think they would go out of business. I think they would pay their loans back. But they might actually go out of business. So you do take a risk that the bond you purchase might never be repaid, right? So we always tell people, just make sure wherever you put your money, doesn't matter where you put it, always be prepared for the fact that things won't turn out the way you planned.
Sure.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Even banks sometimes go out of business.
A couple years ago, that was a big deal.
That was a very, very big deal. Yeah.
Signature, and I forget a couple of the others out there.
That's right. They needed to be bailed out and so on and so forth. So, yeah, so bonds do. They provide a very predictable income stream from interest if people are taking that kind of interest from their bond. There's different maturity dates, and so bonds can be a good tool like that, but there are risks. And everything you do from an investment standpoint always involves a risk.
Yeah, all of these, the stocks, the bonds, and when we get to precious metals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we talk to people and who sometimes will say to us, hey guys, can you help us structure our portfolio in a way that there isn't any risk?
It's impossible.
It's impossible. There's a risk in everything. Mm-hmm. It's a funny coin that doesn't have two sides.
We can do our best to mitigate.
Yeah,
but you can't avoid all risk.
That's right. So King Solomon back back in the day, thousands of years ago, the book of Ecclesiastes, he said, divide your portion to seven or even eight because you don't know what evil may befall you, mm-hmm. right? So you don't know what kinds of problems there will be tomorrow. So it's, you know, that's kind of a biblical basis for diversification. Mm-hmm. And
different factors can affect these different asset classes differently.
Say a little bit more about that.
Well, that's pretty much what diversification is. So you don't want things that are, you know, too correlated to where if something were to happen, like, for example, buying all tech stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we have another tech bubble that pops, mm-hmm. then your portfolio as a whole is going to go down.
That's right.
But if you have different asset classes that are pushed and pulled in different directions by different factors, then, you know, it should be a smoother ride for you.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing because, you know, the way to make money is to really concentrate on, you know, maybe one thing. But then the more concentrated you are, you run a much bigger risk
of losing that money as well.
Of losing that money as well. Mm-hmm. That's right. So you just can't have
it. And same for the bonds, right? So mm-hmm. if you have bonds from 5 to 10 different companies, you spread that risk around a little bit. And mm-hmm. if one company goes out of business, you're not affected as much.
That's right. Yeah. Or if you have 100 bonds from 100 different companies. Mm-hmm. That's right. So again, you can't avoid risk. You can do things to try to mitigate the risk and bring risk down, but you really can't avoid risk. And one of the best ways to mitigate risk is to spend less than you're making.
Right? Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that
live in a surplus.
That's right. So that your financial position is such that if there are problems out there, that you are positioned much, much better to be able to actually get through those problems.
Mm-hmm.
To have a good plan like that. Well, you know, we wanted to get to another. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the term asset class. So just, you know, what's an asset class?
Oh, an asset class is just a certain type of investment vehicle that will be a part of your overall portfolio. And essentially, they could be affected by some of the same market conditions and factors, or like I said, they can be affected differently or not at all by certain ones.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was... every time I think class, I always think like, you know, the class of 83.
Or you're something. Dating yourself now.
I'm dating myself. Well, no, I didn't say I was in the class of 83. I mean, I actually was. But there's different classes, right? And all the people that graduated together were in that same class.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be helpful to our listeners is that they think about different types of investments that all have the same kind of characteristics. So like you could say all stocks, for example, that would be a class.
Mm-hmm.
You could sort of divide that down and say all small company stocks.
We could make it easier for folks. Think like vehicles,
mm-hmm.
right? Automobile, that would be like investments overall. But then mm-hmm. you break that down. SUVs, sport coupes, minivans, pickup trucks.
They're
different
right.
classifications of vehicles.
That's right. So you have all cars, but then you have all Chevy Malibus,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is a really tiny segment inside of a much bigger class.
Mm-hmm.
Or all Chevy Colorados,
mm-hmm.
right? Or Honda Accords or something like that. So these are all groups of things. And
they each fall inside of a class.
Inside of a class. That's right. So, yeah. So to mitigate and diversify risk, it's... you can have different asset classes, and it doesn't make you immune to any problems, but it puts your money in different places. So if somebody shows up and says, well, you know, I'm really diversified. I have 5 different mutual funds. Does that automatically mean they're diversified?
No, they could be invested in a lot of the same holdings and
all
those.
They could be invested in, yeah. And we call that overlap. When people are invested in, they feel like they're diversified, but they're actually invested in a lot of the same things, and that simply isn't diversification. So it's important to understand that. So
yeah, we only got about 2 minutes left. Do you want to touch on the precious metals?
Yeah, let's touch, and maybe we'll pick that up some next week as well. But again, precious metals are again another class. So mm-hmm. they're precious metals are not a stock. They're not a bond. they are a thing, right? Precious metals are actually...
It's a tangible asset.
It's a tangible asset. Mm-hmm. It's actually found on the periodic table of elements. I looked up the periodic table of elements. That was not one of my favorite topics in school, right?
Like you looked it up for this show or
I did.
Recently?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Recently, like 3 or 4 days ago.
Yeah.
And when, I mean, I'm sure everybody at the office thought that I was not like doing anything, you know, because it probably looked like I was just surfing the web or something. But there is the periodic table of elements. And you know what's on there? I mean, gold is on there, palladium, nickel.
Platinum.
Platinum. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Iridium.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go look that up. That'll be our puzzler for next week. something related to iridium, right? I'm probably pronouncing that the wrong way. But yes, yeah, absolutely. Precious metals are an asset class. Real estate is another asset class. It's a totally different type of thing than a stock or a bond or ownership. So we hear a lot about precious metals in today's environment because usually if the purchasing power of our dollar is going down, then the things that dollar purchases feel like they're going up in value. And, you know, the truth might be that they're not really going up in value. What's going down in value is our
dollar.
Our dollar. That's exactly right. So, I'm looking forward to diving into this next week a little bit more. But we do have to wrap it up here today.
Yep.
And I think we have like 7 seconds left.
Well, thanks for listening. Yeah. This was Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.